Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the cold, wet, dreary city of Los Angeles, California. Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. It occasionally rains in Southern California. Unfortunately, occasionally has become a constant occurrence so far here this winter. Lakers at home tonight. I'm going. That's right. That's right. No LeBron, and it's the Bulls. But that is a birthday present to me. So I am over the age of 21. And the boys got me a brand new Travis Matthew hat, which I couldn't be happier to wear. La Bushwood Country Club, which the sad thing is, Dan Byer, who's nice enough to sign the card, probably has no idea what Bushwood Country Club is because I don't believe he's ever seen Caddyshack. But anyway, Mr. Scholarship winner. And of course, Ryan Music wasn't even born when the esteemed producer wasn't even born when said movie came out. Nonetheless, the guys chipped in and got me a ball cap, which that's a way right to my heart. Congratulations to John Ramos, whose wife now is pregnant, but we saw, if you follow him on Facebook, you know we actually have video proof, right?
Video proof.
You saw the little Ramos?
Yes. We're not sure if it's a boy or girl, but it's definitely having some good fun in there. So.
Yes, having some. Not sure if it's a boy or a girl, and of course that means it's definitely a Ramos baby and could be a Ramos boy because, you know, sometimes even after birth with the Ramos, I'm kidding. That's a shot a little bit below the belt, both literally and figuratively. All right, let's get after it. People freak out about the thing we see last in sports. That becomes the determinant as to good season, bad season. And I'll give you, for example, Virginia basketball. I believe this is the year Virginia basketball breaks through and gets to the Final Four. But because last year they were the first number one seed to lose to a 16 seed, there are some that sit there and go, wow, Virginia had a bad season. No, they didn't. They had a spectacular season, culminating in an ACC tournament championship. That's incredible. Like, look, for you to go into the ACC, which is, look, we can talk about the Big 12, and I'm a Big 12 alum. I think it's probably the hardest league to win because you play everybody twice, and last year they were all good teams. Or we can talk about this year's Big 10. Look, the ACC is the best league in the country in college basketball. It's the SEC of basketball. You know, even last year, Louisville down, but you got Syracuse. Syracuse just beat Duke last night. And Syracuse, of course, even down last year, is still capable of beating anyone in the country. Duke, Carolina, Virginia, Louisville, Notre Dame, Florida State always talented. I go on and on. Virginia, to win the regular season and win postseason ACC, is an incredible year. An incredible team that lost in the tournament. We do that in college football, where a team has a great year, loses in a bowl game, and somehow now, well, Notre Dame didn't belong in. Notre Dame, fraud. Notre Dame, hey, Notre Dame beat Michigan. Hey, Notre Dame beat Florida State. Beat the hell out of Florida State. Notre Dame, and you're like, everybody beat Florida State. So, like, that's to win at Virginia Tech, to beat USC, to beat Stanford. They beat them all. And even if those teams are down, not only one are they Notre Dame, still a big game for everybody, and two, they were undefeated Notre Dame, big game for everybody. Just because they lost the college football playoff doesn't make that mean they didn't have a spectacularly, unbelievably great A-plus season. And the same is true in the National Football League. I was texting with my friends in the Chargers. And obviously, they were disappointed. They didn't play well. And they lived down to every negative reputation of the Chargers of the past. Matter of fact, I tweeted out during the game, these are your San Diego Chargers, right? Isn't that what it felt like? Like, yeah, that felt like the San Diego Chargers more than the LA Chargers. They muff a punt. They got 10 guys on the field twice, right? Blown coverage. They just looked. And then Phillip Rivers putting up yardage late. You're like, ugh. But the Chargers had a spectacular season. And not just because of expectations. In any metric, you win 13 games. You win in Seattle, in Baltimore, in Pittsburgh, in Kansas City. You tie for the best record in the AFC. You had a great season. You just lost your last game. Which brings us to the Dallas Cowboys, who yesterday told us they're not firing any coaches. Do you know why? Because we had an awesome year. Because we did incredible things. Because we believe we're on the right path and we're not that far off. And if you didn't think that they thought they're on the right path, here's Jerry Jones talking about Jason Garrett.
If Jason had been out on the market 2 weeks ago, he would have had five offers for head coaching. I know that. So you've got to look at what your alternative is. When I look at what our coaching staff and how it's evolved, I give it a good grade.
Yeah. Who wouldn't? Like, there's this, like, get rid of Rod Marinelli. Okay. What Jerry Jones is talking about, a lot of times, you know, guys go on the radio, owners, GMs, coaches, quarterbacks, and they say nothing. That was real talk right there. All right, you want me to fire Jason Garrett? Who are you going to hire? Oh, you're going to hire Lincoln Riley, who's been a head coach in college football for exactly two seasons. How does that work out? Oh, we're going to run the air raid offense. We have Dak Prescott as our quarterback. Guess what? He's not an air raid quarterback, bro. He ain't throwing it 40 times a game. And we don't even know if that works in the National Football League. Let alone the leadership and who he's going to hire on defense and what does he do with the rest of the coaching staff. You ask anybody in the NFL, especially quarterbacks, what's the biggest determinant in your success? And they'll say continuity. I got to know, for Dak Prescott, I got to know where everybody is supposed to be. Think about this season. You think about it and you're like, man, they got their asses kicked by the Rams, 30-22. All right, they lost by 8 points. That's a touchdown, a two-point conversion. And we would all concur that the Rams have an outstanding roster, right? The Rams are top-loaded. The Rams are win this year. Whereas the Cowboys, they got a lot of youth. Young quarterback, young running back, young linebackers, young defensive line. A lot of youth. They lost their center for the year to start the season. To an autoimmune disorder, right? That did happen. They lost Tyron Smith, who's probably the best offensive lineman in the NFL during the season. Sean Lee was in and out of the lineup. I know it's Sean Lee. He's always in and out of the lineup, but he is their leader defensively. And they went half the year without a number one wide receiver. And once they got him and they figured out who they were and what they were pretty good. This is the same team that reeled off five consecutive wins, end of the season winning 6 out of 7, beat the Eagles on the road, swept the Eagles, beat the Eagles on the road while sweeping them, and beat the Saints as well, a team that's still playing. They weren't beating rummies. They weren't beating the bottom of the league. And what Jerry Jones is saying is completely true. Hey, here's how you know if somebody's good. If I was to fire him, he's going to get hired immediately. Probably means I shouldn't have fired him. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if I don't have a definitive, here's who I'm going to go to, why just fire a guy? And when you consider they were 3-5, they made one trade and turned around their fortunes. Dak got better. Zeke got better. Defense got better. Offensive line figured out, got better. And they did win a playoff game and lost to a team that was picked by many to compete for and win a Super Bowl. Like, we could get caught up in, hey, you know, they lost their last game. Okay. Could their offense have been more explosive? Sure. But what are your alternatives? You know, everybody wants to change quarterbacks. Okay. If you change quarterbacks, and I'm not saying with the Cowboys, but other teams, let's get rid of this quarterback. Who are you going to get to replace him? It's the reason that Matt Stafford is always going to be overpaid. You can get rid of Matt Stafford. He's not the best quarterback in the NFL, but you know you do have to find somebody to replace him. The Bills have been searching for 30 years since Jim Kelly retired to find a replacement. The Dolphins have been searching. You go on and on. Jerry Jones gave you actual substance. Hey, man, you may not love him, but if I was to fire him, he'd have five jobs already offered to him, and I wouldn't have a candidate who's a locked-up cinch that I know can succeed in this environment with these players. When you take into context our season, where it was going, the general feeling around the building, we made one trade, and we won our division and won a playoff game and lost in a competitive game to a really good team? Like, this knee-jerk last game is who you are is dumb. That is prisoner of the moment. That is fan stuff. I actually thought you saw great leadership and understanding and context in Jerry Jones.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
This is one of my favorite times of the week when we have Michael Lombardi on, former general manager in the NFL. Pick up his book, Genius, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL. Also download his podcast, GM Street. You learn about football, how teams are built, how they're constructed. And when he comes on with us, he gives you more of his reaction to the most recent events, like the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones coming out and saying, hey, look, if I fired Jason Garrett, he'd have five offers. And I don't really have somebody I want to turn to. We had a good year. I'm not going to make a change. Is that the right way to look at it, Michael, from your perspective?
You know, I think Jerry's about comfort, and I think Jerry wants somebody that he can work with. I don't think the head coach is not truly a head coach in the Cowboy organization. We've seen Jerry with two coaches. One belongs in the Hall of Fame, or at least on the Ring of Honor, Jimmy Johnson, you know, that had their own way and wanted to run the organization. And Jerry's never comfortable like that. Jason makes Jerry comfortable. And if you own the team and you can own a 270-foot yacht and you've got helicopters, you might as well have a coach that you're comfortable with. So this is really not about excellence. This is about comfort.
Okay, but can they win big with this current with the way they're doing it?
You know, Doug, you sound like Perry Mason. You're asking questions you know the answer to already. I mean, seriously, you know they can't win big like this. There's never been a paradigm where the owners run the team. Look, I worked for Al Davis for a long, long time, and nobody knew more football than Al Davis, me included. And it was almost impossible to win when the owner's running the team. It's impossible because the guy who stands in front of the players, if the players don't think they work for that guy, they're not going to work to the level that they have to. And the fact that they've been able to do what they did in Dallas to get to this level, pretty remarkable. But Dallas has some issues, and they were on display Saturday night in Los Angeles. They're going to have to fix those issues. They're going to have to find a way to get Dak Prescott to run the ball a little bit, utilize his feet. They're also going to have to use Zeke Elliott in the passing game more than what they do. They can't allow him just to be a runner and then a screen player. And those answers aren't going to come by keeping the staff in place. Those answers are going to come by having divergent thoughts with a new offensive staff, and I'm not sure Jerry's going to do that.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't use him in the pass game, especially against the Rams. Isn't that the way in which you beat Wade Phillips, right? Running backs in the passing game?
Well, when a guy wants to play man-to-man as much as Wade does, somebody's going to be locked on Al Elliott, you know, and so you've got a chance. I mean, Kareem Hunt, I mean, here's the challenge for the Chiefs. Kareem Hunt touched the ball 10 times for 80 yards in the game, and then he had another 105 yards pass catching. Now, who's going to get the 185 yards that Kareem Hunt got in the first Patriot game? Somebody's going to have to. Andy Reid's smart enough to figure it out. But that's the kind of game that Zeke Elliott should have all the time, 185 yards combined doing all different things. And it doesn't have to be, hey, fellas, we're going to run him. Here he is. Come get him. You can utilize skill sets differently, and I think that's what they don't do in Dallas. And it was an easy plan for Wade to figure out. You know, the 4th-and-1 call, they ran the same exact play that they ran on the 4th-and-1 before. And if you read my book, Gridiron Genius, you know the most important plays in the playoffs are 3rd and 4th and 1s. If you don't convert them, you're standing on the sideline.
What about the Rams and their ability to run the football right at the Dallas Cowboys? What was your reaction?
I thought Aaron Cromer is an unsung hero on this whole thing. He's a great line coach. I was with him at the Raiders. He does a wonderful job. Everybody wants the next Sean McVay. Nobody gave Aaron Cromer at least a sniff. And he understands how to run the football. And they run it at home. Now, running the ball against the Dallas Cowboys at home and running the ball on the Saints on the road is going to be a little bit more problematic. And I think because of that, it won't be the same. But they had a great scheme. You know, when you break that game down, they only ran about 10 plays in the game. It was a very simple, clean game plan that really was utilized very effectively, and I think because of it, they were able to have so much success.
It's fascinating because people give McVay a ton of credit, and I hear analyst after analyst saying, you know, the creativity of Sean McVay, and I think his creativity is the simplicity, right? Isn't it? I mean, they're almost always in the same alignment. You know, they have you thinking they're going to run jet sweep, so it keeps the backside guy home. But it really is simplicity and execution more so than any sort of, you know, formation that has you confused.
No doubt. I mean, he's not trying to gimmick you. He's trying to beat you. But the way he does it, I thought Troy Aikman, it's kind of funny. Troy was talking, you know, and he said that Sean McVay coaches every position when he was out of practice, which I know he does. Now, it's funny that everybody's trying to hire a Sean McVay clone because since he coaches every position, what are you actually getting, right? But I think what the point here is, when you're simple, you can be complex. When you have a simple base scheme, you can adapt that scheme to the opponent you're playing in a complex way where the players don't react and think, oh, my God, this is too complicated to understand. You don't become a volume of offense. And so he tailors his game plan, which starts simple, to the team he's going to play. He's no different than Bill Belichick. He's really no different than Joe Gibbs, who ran about six plays at the Washington Redskins, but he dressed them up depending on who he was playing, and everybody thought it was confusing and all, it was so hard to defend, when in reality, it was simple but complex for the opponent.
All right, let's get to the team they're going to play, the New Orleans Saints. They miss a field goal, which, you know, could have given them like an insurmountable edge, and then they survive because Alshon Jeffrey drops the football. They fell behind 14-0 at home on a couple of explosive plays. What's your takeaway from the Saints' victory over the Eagles?
Look, I think the Saints have been remarkable all season. They're one of the few teams that can win right-handed or left-handed. They go into Minnesota, they gain 120 yards, they win. They go to Carolina, can't move the ball at all, and they beat Carolina on the road. They go to Baltimore, have a 20-play drive, they win that game because Tucker misses a field goal. They are truly a team that has proven they can play right or left-handed. They were the only team that won this past weekend that got behind at the half. Everybody else came out in the first quarter and dominated the game immediately. And to me, that's when they have a really good team. I think they dodged a huge bullet. And most coaches, and every NFL coach, should go back over that situation that Sean Payton was faced with. First and 10 at the Eagle 33 with 3 minutes to go in the game. We need 3 points. We got to make sure we make the field goal. Because when he missed that field goal, you and I both know, Doug, that's a turnover. Now, they never said it on television, but that's a turnover. And they turned that ball over and gave the Eagles a chance, and by luck had it, they were able to come out of it. So I think they played their B-plus, maybe B game, and won, which is a tribute to the Saints.
What about the other side in the Philadelphia Eagles? You have Nick Foles, and obviously it feels like that contract is prohibitive in terms of him staying on the roster. How do you evaluate him for the rest of the league?
You know, it's really not that hard of a situation. I think there's a great narrative to Nick Foles, and I think Nick Foles as a leader and what he's been able to bring to the locker room has been remarkable. That being said, there is no number that I can watch that Nick Foles has proven to play better than Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz averages more yards per attempt in his games. He averages more touchdown percentages. He's a lower interception percentage. Everything he does is better. But Nick Foles seems to have an ability with the team to be able to resonate and lead them back. The untold secret that nobody wants to talk about is the fact that the Eagles' defense is the reason why they were able to go on this run. The LeBlanc in the slot, Maddox playing corner, and the ability of their defensive line, whether it be Bennett, Graham, Fletcher Cox inside, the emergence of Tim Jernigan, those guys coming back were why the Eagles turned their season around. Nick Foles helped. But Nick Foles wasn't the reason, the defense was.
If you're Jacksonville, if you're one of these teams in need of a quarterback, is he viable to lead another franchise?
You know, I do think so, but I think this, Doug, I think you've got to run the offense that fits Nick Foles. Nick Foles is not any offense will win. Nick Foles is specifically to what Chip Kelly does. He's a one-read quarterback. If he has to hold the ball for longer than 2.5 seconds,
yep,
all hell breaks loose, and he's got to get it out of his hand. We saw that happen. He had 151 yards on the first two drives of the game. They never won another series in the game where they had more than 5 plays. The Saints did a great job of adjusting to his strengths. That's what you got to do when you play him. And I think he's got to be in the right offense for his skill set.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Michael Lombardi. His book, Gridiron Genius, one you should pick up, Masterclass, Building Winning Championships and Building Dynasties in the NFL. Also download his podcast called GM Street, longtime front office guy and GM for several different franchises. Let's go to one that you worked for, the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick. An absolute masterful game plan. Did you see this coming?
If you listen to Betting Across America on VSiN on Sirius 204, I sure did. I talked about it on my show. I mean, to me, this was written in the cards. I don't understand why anybody thought the Chargers were going to win this game. Let's just go back to it. First of all, the Patriots understand that the Chargers' offensive line isn't very good. There's no way that Michael Schoenfeld could block Trey Flowers. They were going to force Phillip Rivers and having a lot of pressure inside the paint, which they did. The other thing they were going to be able to do is run him out of – Josh McDaniels has always had a lot of success against a Seattle style of defense, which is not an adjustment defense. They do what they do. That's what they do. And Josh McDaniels is the king of attacking if you don't adjust. And Gus Bradley got caught behind the ball, 35 points in the first half. To me, anybody who bet the Chargers that weekend really wasn't paying attention to football in the purest sense, because the numbers might have said one thing, but the reality of the coaches on both sidelines said another.
Okay, so now they have to go into Kansas City. They've beaten the Chiefs before, but not on the road. And the Chiefs are a little bit different. Obviously, that defense line played incredibly well. And look, they stopped the run of the Colts. Colts looked like a dome team playing outside. How does this version of the Patriots match up with the Chiefs?
Well, you go back and watch the first game. Patrick Mahomes had some guys open. He missed them. He didn't play as well as he needed to play. Didn't play. If he plays a little bit better, they win that game. The Chiefs are the better team, even though the Patriots held the ball 36 minutes in the game. The Patriots were able to run the football, and they controlled the pace. And for the fact that they only had 53 plays, the Chiefs had almost over 400 yards. Kareem Hunt, like I mentioned earlier, was responsible for 185. They got to find a way to replace him in the passing game. He had 105 yards in the passing game. The Patriots are going to give them the 3- and 4-yard gains, but they're going to play good in the red zone, and they're going to play really good at not getting the ball thrown over the head. What I think has to happen is Mahomes has got to make those throws down the field. He can't miss. He missed Kelce for a touchdown. He missed Kareem Hunt for a touchdown. He missed Tyreek Hill for a touchdown. He can't have that. I think that's going to be the key to the game. And then, of course, Brady's got to play really well on the road, something they haven't done in the last month. They got to be able to run the football. If the Chiefs line up in their nickel and try to play run defense in their nickel, the Patriots will run them right out of it.
So who do you like?
It's too early in the week, but I'm leaning towards the Chiefs as I'm watching these games again. Doug, I think it's, you know, playing at home, I think it's so hard, but I think the Chiefs defensively will not be able to duplicate that performance. If you would have told me that the Chiefs would have held the best third down team in football to 0 for no converting third downs, I'd have said you're crazy. And they did. Now, look, one thing we know for sure, even though the Chargers probably never practiced with frozen balls all week, the Patriots will go outside all week in the cold, and so will the Chiefs. The cold's not going to bother either one of these teams.
I want to ask you about the Colts. They fired their offensive line coach because he wasn't Frank Reich's guy. Now, Frank Reich's going to swear by him. I know this happens all the time where you want your guy, but wasn't their offensive line a big reason for their success?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I like Gooch. Gooch and I were together in New England. He's a really good football coach. It's really unfortunate. He should get a job immediately. He's a good technical coach. What Frank Reich's saying is he wanted somebody who understands his system, who can lend to the game planning, because he knows what he wants in terms of the game plan. And I'm sure because Gooch had never been around him, didn't really know that. So that's why I want my guy around me.
What do you do if you're the Steelers and you have Antonio Brown?
Well, I think it's a complex situation. I think the one thing the Steelers are doing is they're coming to the defense of their head coach. They want to change the culture, and they're going to change the culture by getting rid of Antonio Brown. It's going to be expensive. And the team that takes them better make sure they know what they're getting. Getting a great player, there's no doubt. Let's not discuss how great of a player Antonio Brown is. He's great. The reality of it is, what's he going to do to your locker room? And is he going to tear things down the way he's done in Pittsburgh? Is it his fault, or did the Steelers allow him to happen? You know, in football, like in basketball or any sport, you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. Something happened in Pittsburgh that caused Brown to go off and not become a positive influence. You don't need to find that out before you make a trade.
Okay, so, but what's his value? Like, how do you get proper value in return? You're going to take a huge cap hit. And granted, you'll save some cash, and there's some way you can move some money around. What's the proper value? If you're the Steelers, you're like, look, we're getting rid of an asset, and though he's a pain, he's a super talented one, we got to get something back in return. because we're also taking a shot in terms of the salary cap?
That's a hard question to answer because I just don't know. I don't know the magnitude of the problems, and no one else does. You know, is he worth a first-round pick? There's no doubt he's worth a first-round pick. There's no question about that. However, that being said, he's not worth a first-round pick if he's going to come in and tear up your locker room. You know, Randy Moss went for a fourth-round pick, and Randy Moss was great when he got traded by me to New England for a fourth-round pick. He was great. I didn't make the trade. Belichick and Al Davis did. The reality of it is his value was so low because people saw him as a cancer. He never was. I knew the real story. Now, I don't know the real story about Antonio Brown. What happened? I think that's going to be the key issue of figuring this out. Mike Munchak will know. So if Denver's interested in Antonio Brown, he would know. If Denver's not interested in Antonio Brown, that tells you something right there.
The college offenses are all the rage. Now, Kyler Murray has put his name in for the NFL draft. I've heard him described by a couple personnel people to me as he's Doug Flutie with Mike Vick's athleticism. But he's tiny. I mean, it's one thing to be short, but he's just a little guy. Is incredibly electric athletically and can throw the football. And he's been successful high school and college, but we've seen those type of guys fail in the NFL. How would you evaluate him in 2019 in the NFL?
Well, I wrote a piece for The Athletic, and I talked about it. And I thought that, and I described him, and I wrote him up as I see him through my eyes as a football guy. I don't know his baseball talent. I don't know if he can hit a curveball. I don't know if he's got range as a center fielder. But I do know, as a football player, the list of 5'9 players who make a huge impact on the National Football League is non-existent. And I think he's tremendous. I think he's got athleticism. He's got a gun. His feet are magical. He's smart. He's tough. I love everything about him, except he's 5'9". And I'm not a height snob. I recognize that Russell Wilson's 5'11". I recognize that Drew Brees barely 6 feet. I understand that. But at some point, you got to stand behind the pocket and make throws when you're directly in the paint, and you got to see it over big linemen. When you go back and study Baker Mayfield this year, and I wrote about it in The Athletic, and there's a quote from a player that played at Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield would come back in the huddle many times and say, you know, I just didn't see it. I didn't see it. That's going to be a problem. I didn't see it. Now, Baker Mayfield got out of the pocket and made a ton of plays, and he's a good player. But Baker Mayfield's a lot taller than Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray, to me, baseball would be his best option because that's pure football. I've never seen a 5'9 guy. You're too young to remember Eddie LeBaron. I don't remember that.
I mean, how big is Doug Flutie?
Doug Flutie, I stood. Doug Flutie's 5'9", but Doug Flutie, what games did other?
No. I'm with you. People misremember Doug Flutie. He had to go to Canada to win, and he was as a backup. And he came in. He had that run with Buffalo, and they benched him in the playoffs one year. But it wasn't like Doug Flutie's a great quarterback. But but Flutie is the same size, right?
I would say they're probably about the same. But the reality of this is Flutie was really athletic. I mean, don't undersell Doug Flutie's athleticism. He was good. Now, he was maybe not as fast as Kyler Murray, but he was athletic. And, you know, people say, well, the game's changed. Yeah, it has changed to a degree. But the reality of this is you got to make tight throws on third down in the pocket with people coming down on you. You got to make them. And if you can't see them to make them, it's going to be hard. You can't change that.
Great stuff. Michael Lombardi, pick up his book, Gridiron Genius, or download his podcast, GM Street. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
James Harden had 57 points last night. 57 points. Now, I think the only one who's going to point this out. There's like three or four factors that have allowed James Harden to have the statistical dominance. Let's go with four. The first one is he's damn good at offense. Okay. The second one is his usage rate is through the roof. And what is usage rate? Basically, it's the percentage of times in which he has the ball in his hands to make a play, to take the shot or make the pass that leads to the shot. His usage rate is obscene in comparison to the rest of the league. Obscene. The third thing is they are playing at a faster pace, which means more possessions per game than they have previously in the last 25 years in the NBA. So when you factor those three in, and then they're shooting more threes than they have at any point in time. So technically, he's putting up crazy numbers. And they're numbers that stack up with, for example, with Wilt Chamberlain. But the reality is those stats are skewed by those other factors that I'm pointing out. What James Harden is and how he's playing is like Bumblebee. Ramos, have you seen or reviewed Bumblebee?
I have not seen the Transformer movie Bumblebee, no.
It's been really well reviewed.
It has, and making a lot of money.
It's making a lot of money. All the Transformer movies make a lot of money. And Bumblebee might be the best of the Transformer movies. I think the original Transformer is probably the best. This is probably the second best. Hey, is Bumblebee going to win an Academy Award? Will anybody put Bumblebee in one of their top 10 movies of all time? But if you go grab an expensive thing of popcorn, an expensive Coke, and maybe some sour straws, right? Anybody got any problem with sour straws? It's un-American. Or you get some Reese's Pieces. You ever had Reese's Pieces and hot popcorn? You eat them at the same time? That's an amazing. Do it. Again, with the popcorn, get there early. Ask, no, like the French fries I talked about at McDonald's. I'll wait for your next hot batch. Yes, I want butter midway through, right? Popcorn butter, salt on top. I'll handle the cholesterol and the caloric intake. Then get some Reese's Pieces. Take a bite of popcorn. Throw a couple Reese's Pieces in your mouth. Same time. It's going to the same place. You're welcome, America. Wash it down with a Dr. Pepper. It's flat out heaven. Like, if Trump had served that, no one would be giving him the business today. Nobody. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with Bumblebee. It's a good movie. It's fun. It's got action. It's got love. It's got a little sci-fi to it. It's got some yucks, right? It's got sex appeal to it with some of the humans that are in it. It's got CGI, but not so much CGI that you're like, all right, enough. This thing was just filmed on a green screen. It's a little bit of everything. That's what James Harden is. Like, in order to play this way in the playoffs, he doesn't have any juice left to play defensively. And everybody else is just standing around, and eventually he's going to tire himself out. And then once they get to the playoffs, they're going to play a completely different way when guys haven't been used to playing with the basketball, and suddenly now he's going to play defense? And, oh yeah, by the way, much like Bumblebee came out around Christmas time, when you're going to make a bunch of movie and make a bunch of money, and there was no Will Smith challenger movie, right? There was no other huge blockbuster that was going to challenge it. It's going to make a bunch of money. Will it make the most money ever? No. Is it the best franchise movie ever? No. It's good. It's fine. It's great. And in the context of right now, when it's really hard to make franchise movies because they're really expensive and things go straight to Netflix and straight to Amazon and straight to your phone, it's found a way to take advantage of franchise timing, funding, window of opportunity, and do really well. That's James Harden. Like, look, statistically, we're going to put him up with the all-time greats. But you could have said the same thing with Russell Westbrook the last 2 years, averaging a triple-double. But those are both helped out by the way basketball is played, the number of possessions, and how we evaluate the stats of today versus the stats of yesterday, when it's a completely different sport with completely different number of possessions and completely different personal dominance in terms of usage ratings. James Harden's Bumblebee. It's good. It's great. I got nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong. Is he the best player ever? Like, no. Hell no. I mean, if Jordan had a 39% usage rating and shot that many, usage rate was 39 and shot the number of threes and didn't have to play defense, what do you think his numbers would be? Jordan averaged 37 a game and his usage was like at 22, 23. Prorate that and then play at this pace. And play where defenses can't hand check you, can't touch you, and you get to the foul line anytime you bring your hands up to shoot the basketball. What do you think is going to happen? It's not even one of the all-time great seasons. In the context of this season, during this window of time when LeBron's not playing, when Westbrook can't make a shot, when the Celtics are trying to figure out their team, when the Warriors are still, you know, cycling through, trying to wait for DeMarcus Cousins, and they had Steph coming back from injury, and they have kind of a dysfunctional group trying to get themselves motivated. It's awesome. Kawhi Leonard's not playing every night. Everybody else is playing for the, getting ready for the postseason, and James Harden's putting up numbers now. Cool. Awesome. He'll probably win the MVP. Is he the best player in the league? No, because there's two ends to the floor. Is it a style that translates to the playoffs? No. Going to have somebody else help you, and you're going to have to play defense. But it's fun. There's zero wrong with enjoying the experience, much like there's zero wrong with going to Bumblebee, buying a huge popcorn. Listen, for a dollar more, you get the large, and you can get a free refill. Nothing wrong with that. Sure, here's my dollar. I overpaid for popcorn, overpaid for the movie, but I get the whole experience.